Hey there, this is Jim Bovard for the Future Freedom Foundation. President George Herbert Walker Bush died about 10 days ago. First time I saw him in person, he was given a campaign speech out in southern Illinois in early 1980 as part of his pursuit of the Republican presidential nomination that year. Bush's spiel that day was the usual campaign stump speech, nothing memorable. However, after the speech, a young student at Southern Illinois University politely asked him about his role in the Trilateral Commission. Bush became unglued, shouting angrily about how people were always hassling him about that connection. Someone once said that George Bush's voice always sounded like Mr. Rogers trying to sound like John Wayne. Yeah, I could see that. Last week, there was an elaborate funeral service for Bush at the National Cathedral, trying to carve Bush's place in the history books. The cathedral was knee-deep in poobahs. Many of the best and brightest of the last 40 years, they've done so many good things for this country. Historian John Meacham gave one of the first tributes, and Meacham said that Bush was a 20th century founding father. Nobody there laughed. They were just very solemn and nodding their heads. I think I heard in the distance Thomas Jefferson spinning in his grave. And then the Reverend Minister came up, and this guy was a pastor at Bush's church in Houston, and he was very effusive, and the most memorable line was he compared Bush to Jesus. Again, nobody laughed. They just nodded their heads. I was thinking, holy. I started to think I was out of sync with the attendees at that service. And then former Senator Alan Simpson talked about how Bush was a hero for betraying his most important campaign pledge of 1988, his "Read my lips, no new taxes" promise. The audience loved Simpson's take on that. It was at that point I understood why I had not been invited. Pundits talked about how that funeral service was a showcase for nobility in government, but the folks at that service were not my kind of nobles. I wrote a lot about Bush when he was president, and I struggled to reconcile what I knew with what people were saying at that service. Let's consider Bush's record as president. Bush was the most protectionist president since Herbert Hoover. Like Trump, he spoke of the need for level playing fields and fair trade. But Bush-style fairness gave federal bureaucrats endless vetoes over what Americans could buy from foreign producers. Bush's Commerce Department ravaged importers with one scam after another, using the dumping law to convict 97% of imports they investigated, claiming that their prices were unfairly low for American producers. And how did they get this 97% conviction rate? For instance, Japanese automakers were convicted after commerce bureaucrats compared the price of used cars sold in Japan with the price of new cars sold here in the U.S. Used cars were cheaper, so the Japanese were guilty of dumping. The Commerce Department compared the price of small kiwis from New Zealand sold abroad with the price of imported large kiwis sold here. Since the smaller kiwis were cheaper, that proved the foreigners were bastards. And to hell with American consumers. Bush seemed downright paranoid of imports at times when he was president. He ordered a major investigation after America was hit by a flood of foreign ice cream. Government trade officials defined floods differently. The imports were only about 1% of the U.S. market. A lot of folks don't realize that Häagen-Dazs is actually made in New Jersey, which explains why if you have more than two scoops, there's that chemical aftertaste. Bush often talked about how trade was the key to spreading prosperity to poorer nations, but he slapped new textile import quotas on a heap of third world nations. In 1989, Mexico was allowed to sell Americans only 35,292 bras, not even enough to cup the city of El Paso, Texas. Though Bush called for a kinder, gentler nation when he was campaigning in 1988, he turned federal drug policy into a holy war, demonizing drug users and hailing DEA agents as America's greatest freedom fighters. Thanks in part to Bush's tub-thumping, drug arrests surged by 200,000 in his first year as president. Bush's choice for a drug czar, Bill Bennett, endorsed public beheadings of drug dealers. It works for Saudi Arabia, why not here? Bush was praised after he died for his gentlemanly manners and inclusive rhetoric. But his drug war converted low-income Americans into third-class citizens. In a Supreme Court case, the Bush administration championed warrantless searches of interstate bus passengers for illicit drugs. What would happen is an interstate bus would pull into a station, and the DEA agents, local police, drug squad would have the bus driver close the door, seal all the passengers in, and then the lawman would go down the aisle demanding to search people's bags. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, says a guy with a Glock on his hip. The Florida Supreme Court struck down those sweeps, saying that they were the kind of abuses that Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia would use. But the Bush administration swayed the Supreme Court to uphold them. And by doing that, you know, defined down the freedom of any American who could only afford a Trailways bus ticket. Probably Bush's biggest folly was the first Gulf War against Iraq. Bush said we had to restore Kuwait's rightful leaders to their place. Why should Americans give a damn which Arab dictators control which patch of sand? The U.S. had previously been arming and subsidizing Saddam Hussein, so he was surprised when the U.S. flipped on him, especially after the U.S. ambassador gave a green light to his invasion. The tributes at Bush's funeral stressed his lofty character, but nobody seems to recall how Bush betrayed the Kurds in 1991. After the end of the war, the Bush administration encouraged the Kurds to rise up and fight the Iraqi government and maybe claim their independence. Then the U.S. did nothing when Saddam brutally crushed the Kurds. Never mind. That was a great dishonor for the U.S. government. After the first Gulf War ended, Bush decided that the U.S. government had the right to permanently blockade Iraq with sanctions, putting a stranglehold on their imports of food, medicine, and other items. Since the Iraqi people had failed to overthrow Saddam, maybe they didn't deserve to eat. Vast numbers of Iraqis died as a result of those sanctions, but they were not invited to the funeral service. Bush's post-war dictates on Iraq helped sow perpetual conflict and paved the way to his son's 2003 invasion of Iraq. That part of the world has been a bigger mess ever since. Plenty of Washington whiz kids are now claiming the U.S. must intervene to take down Iran. Well, Iraq was containing Iran very well until the U.S. government knocked hell out of that nation. Bush's son, George, the 43rd president, spoke at that church service, and he declared that his father was no cynic. But George Herbert Walker Bush's betrayals on his tax pledge and his debacles at home and abroad turned millions of other Americans into cynics. So maybe there was an upside to the first Bush administration after all? Thanks for watching. This is Jim Bovard.